Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago each fall. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. During today's show, I'll be chatting with Amy Morris of the MP Shift, a dynamic concept design and branding studio in New York, as well as top-selling cookbook author and the founder of Dough and La New Yorkina, Fanny Gerson, about their Latin-inspired summer-long pop-up at the Rockaways called The Summer Shift. They'll also join us at the end of the half hour for a very consequential discussion about our very favorite beach eats. But before all that, I am happy to welcome back Gothamist food editor Nell Casey once again for a rundown of the week's breaking culinary food news. Hey there, Nell.
Well, hello again, Sarah.
Good to see you.
Likewise.
So this I love, especially since a few weeks ago, we spoke about a possible Corona shortage. Say it ain't so, but there may soon be another easy drinking beer to add to your regular summer drinking rotation. Hold on to your shorts, all you Simpsons lovers, because I am talking about an honest to goodness Duff beer. So Nell, what is the deal with Duff? And is it essentially swill, which is always how it's been depicted on
The
Simpsons?
Yeah, if you watch The Simpsons, Duff isn't supposed to be some sort of classy, delicious craft beverage. This is stuff that Homer and his pals are getting wasted at Moe's Bar.
Exactly.
But actually, according to Fox, the 20th Century Fox execs and the people who designed the beer, no, this is not swill. This is going to be sort of like a good quality lager. It's supposed to have notes of caramel and fruit, which I just love imagining what Homer would make of that information. Like, he would just be like, right? Donuts? What?
But it does look like swill. Like, essentially, they have branded it and looks exactly like the Duff cans.
Oh, yeah, that's really simple can sort of stuff. But, I mean, the thing that is such a bummer, especially to, you know, Simpsons fans in the United States, is that it's only available in Chile right now.
Okay, that's crazy.
Which is so frustrating.
Okay, but so let's wind back a little bit, because really the reason that this beer is coming out now is because, you know, Fox has spent years embroiled in lawsuits because, believe it or not, there have been a number of Duff copycats. And I guess the reason, you know, it's debuting in Chile is because a lot of those copycats have been in Mexico and South America. So basically, yeah, Fox has gotten wise and decided to brew their own licensed brand, which, in addition to obviously addressing demand, is going to help them protect the copyright now that it is a real and not fictional beer.
Do we love it Duff more now that it's legit, or were the DIY versions better? This is what I really need to know, because now it's so corporate. Ugh.
Corporate Duff. Well, now, like Homer, I, as I'm sure you, have become incredibly accomplished at wasting time at work. That's why we're here right now, right?
No,
instead of writing articles.
That's not true at all, my editor who may be listening.
But so, you know, that frequently entails, as people in all walks of life, scrolling through viral videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And my favorite one this week was of a guy who is evidently very committed to dicking around when he should be working, but you got to give it up, because he was able to use an actual tortilla to play the Mexican hat dance on a record player.
Yes.
Now, I have got a pack of Mission tortillas in my fridge. Is this something that one could easily attempt at home?
Do you also happen to have a laser cutter just hanging around in your apartment? Because if so, yes, this is something you can do at
home. I might. My husband is at this moment making an ice vest for a giant Malamute out of stuff that he's found in the house.
An ice vest?
There may be a laser whatever.
Okay, you're
going
to have to tell me more about this
there.
Ice vest later, because I want one of those because New York City is gross today and I need an ice vest.
All right, but listen, and I gave the big up to my husband. You're welcome, Fred. But instead of talking about this tortilla, I think we're actually able to dig up the clip. I couldn't resist. So we have an audio sample, I believe, of the tortilla in action. Can we play it? Mexican hat dance? Sounds amazing. Oh, there it is.
Shockingly high quality for a tortilla. I will say that I have some old 45 records that were my mom's when she was a kid, and I think that tortilla sounds better than some of these old 45 records that have been collecting dust.
I don't think this is going to be put on your regular rotation at your standard cantina, but this might, you know, be a, I think when I get home, my husband is going to be trying to recreate this. I have a feeling.
Food waste is a huge issue in this country, as John Oliver pointed out last night on his show, so maybe this is the future for stale tortillas, is you just turn them into records. Why not?
Oh, my God. Staying with amazing things happening with Mexican food, our guest for today, Amy, was actually telling us something pretty cool that she heard about. Amy, pitch in.
A photo world mapped Instagram's food photos, and they found out that everywhere they're seeing burritos and churros. So there's a real sign that Latin food is a big trend everywhere right now, not just New York or the Rockaways.
I believe it.
It's so delicious.
As well, we're going to get into in a couple of minutes about how my two wonderful guests have really taken the reins of the Latin explosion, and we'll talk some more about their incredible pop-up, The Summer Shift. But first, we are going to take a little break. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Rockaway Beach's Latin-focused food pop-up, The Summer Shift, is one of the most exciting culinary happenings of the summer. And you have the MP Shift, an innovative concept, branding, and design studio to thank. Which is why I'm excited to be joined in the studio today by co-founder Amy Morris, as well as Fanny Gerson, the James Beard Award-nominated cookbook author and founder of La New Yorkina and Dough, who also happens to be one of the Summer Shift's participating food vendors. Hi there, ladies. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having us.
So talk to us, if you would, about the Summer Shift, what it entails, how it got started, and how long it's running for.
Well, Anna Plonsky, my partner, and I connected with David Selig because he wasn't going to do Rockaway Taco this year. He decided to do something new. But it's coming back next year. Everyone's confused about that. So it will be back next year.
Well, that's good to know.
But we thought, in the 10 years ago in New York, Mexican food was just tacos. And it's grown so much, as I just said, it's a huge trend around the world. We're hosting some of the best chefs from Mexico and beyond in New York. I mean, Fanny's a great example of that.
Absolutely.
So we wanted to introduce some of these chefs to the people in the Rockaways and all the people who come out to the Rockaways. So we talked to David Selig about doing a pop-up where we rotate top Latin chefs from around New York. So right now we have Camille Becerra. So Camille Becerra is cooking in the summer shift now until August 11th. So definitely go check it out. Everything on the menu is just delicious, fresh. She's using fresh fish right up from the vendor off the street.
And she's from the restaurant, the Navy? In
Yes, she's from Navy, which is a great find in Soho.
Yeah.
And she also was on Top Chef a while back.
Yes, so. I remember her.
Yeah, she's great. So she's out there now, and then we have Komodo, who also have Colonia Verde out there next.
Amazing. And love Colonia Verde.
Oh, so
they
good.
Were not there. They were nominated, I believe, for the most beautiful restaurant design. They're designer was.
Oh, the outdoor space. Yeah. I mean, you can't beat their outdoor space, yeah. Really. But they will be out there. And then we have El Rey, which is a favorite of a lot of New Yorkers right now. So
fantastic.
It's a great lineup.
And, of course, the incredible Fanny Gerson, who's, I mean, you're a little more than a pop-up. We're going to see La New Yorkina and be able to take advantage of those paletas all summer long. You're not popping in now, right?
No. Yeah, we were there through the whole summer. But what's really fun is that with each rotating chef, we're doing one particular flavor sort of to highlight the kind of menu that they're doing. So the last one, I believe, with Fernando, we did, he's from Argentina, so we really wanted to do something that was inspired by it. So we did a roasted banana with dulce de leche.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah,
that's amazing.
So that's always fun. You know, we have, like, our other flavors, but then it's always very fun for me to do collaborations. I get to do flavors that I normally wouldn't because they're not Mexican.
Yeah, and the chefs love it too because it's a chance to be creative. Fernando's particularly a creative chef from O Cafe, and mm-hmm. He was really excited about that.
Yeah, so that's always fun.
Well, obviously, as we all hinted out, Latin food is having a moment. But what was really the thought process behind putting the focus on Latin foods and chefs, besides the fact that that is a food that we all want to eat in the summer?
Well, I mean, David Selig has been a visionary, and he's for many, many years, and it was his idea to bring palm trees to the Rockaways. So he brought up about 8 palm trees from
crazy.
Florida. It's insane. I mean, once you see it, it is magical. Palm trees by the sea in the Rockaways. He's building a whole garden around it.
And that's called the Palms,
not
to be confused with the steakhouse. So that's opening
yes, exactly.
in the Rockaways
yes,
definitely
soon.
Not.
Oh, amazing.
Across the street from the summer shift. So the two will play on each other. And at the Palms, we have Greta Gerwig doing a series of films she's
what?
Curating.
Greta, yeah. Come on the show, girl.
And we have a lot of great pop-ups, too. A lot of other chefs are going to come out and host dinners under the palm trees. So the palm trees really inspired the Latin theme. It was David who kind of set that off by telling us about the palm trees, and we thought, why not? You know, it's a great chance to introduce more Latin food and the Latin lexicon to more New Yorkers.
Yeah, and the decorations that you guys have done is amazing. You know, I was very curious about how it was going to look like because it has to host so many different, I mean, it's all Latin, but every chef and every country and every concept is a little bit different, but I think you guys did a fantastic
job. Thank you.
It's beautiful of you. Have you guys been out there
I
yet?
Have not donned my bathing suit yet. I might come in a pretty serious cover-up so I could eat roasted banana paletas and hang out under the palm trees.
Well, we redesigned the facade, and what we did is mm-hmm. we took Brazilian folk art, 2 images of Brazilian folk art, and then we wallpapered the shack in that. It just comes through so beautifully. So it was a fun design. We love redesigning spaces and giving it new life. So,
well, Fanny, you have essentially based your entire career and brand around celebrating Latin food and culture, namely through sweets. So was there a certain perception of Latin, specifically Mexican cuisine, that you were trying to either change or expand upon with your various cookbooks and companies?
Well, I think I just wanted to sort of share things that I missed. That was the main thing, like sort of the heart of it, things that I kept looking for. I remember when I went to school at the CIA, my best friend, also from Mexico, we met there. One day it was really hot and we were craving paletas, so we kept asking people, where can we find paletas? And they looked at us like we were crazy. So we drew it and they're like, oh, a popsicle. So then they said, oh, you buy them at the supermarket. And we're like, at the supermarket? We're used to paleta shops.
Not froze fruits?
Not froze fruits.
I was a big froze fruit fan until you came along, Fanny. You just
ruin them for me.
So then we went to the supermarket and we're looking at them and we're just horrified because they're just artificial colored and flavored, and that is so far from you know, what we grew up with. But that was a long time ago. And then I just kept looking for, in the book, as we were talking earlier, for a book that didn't exist. So I ended up, you know, wanting to write it. And it was, I didn't know if I was going to be able to, if I was going to get the support. But the experience of spending 1 year traveling around Mexico doing research for my first cookbook, My Sweet Mexico, really changed my life. And I just, I feel I'm on a mission to really share the sweetness of Mexico. I know it sounds corny, but...
Not in the least. You are a smart woman. You identified a niche, and you are the preeminent expert.
I don't know about that, but I think that people love Mexican food. But even when I was researching the book or writing it, people were like, you can write a whole book about Mexican desserts. I'm like, you can write a whole encyclopedia, really. And so I think that there's a lot of people that love Mexican food, but not a lot of people know about their amazing sweets.
Well, it's amazing because this is kind of the publishing world and the food world in general doesn't really work like this anymore. But first there was the cookbooks, and then when it came to actually selling your incredible sweets, you got your start at the Hester Street Fair and have really been on the ground floor when it has come to the creation and success of all matter of alfresco food markets. So we're talking about Smorgasburg and the High Line and, of course, the Rockaways. So how do you think the food market model has benefited your own businesses? And how do they stand to benefit small independent businesses in general? And Amy, obviously, you can weigh on this in on this too.
I think that it's great to have the opportunity to have those kinds of markets. And I think it was a timing thing. I think when we started, you know, it was the first year Hester Street was starting. Smorgasburg had also just started. And it's a very sort of low risk financially to open something for something to try out. But now it's very difficult to get in because they have so many people wanting to do that and so many competitors. But it's a way to have a platform and to be able to test the market out. Like for when I started, I said, you know, I'm going to test it out for the summer. And worst case scenario, I made popsicles a whole summer, you know, paletas and that's it, you know, because I really wanted to test how are people going to like the Mexican flavors. Are they going to like the avocado paletas and the corn paletas and
cucumber lime?
Cucumber lime. So I didn't really know. So I think that having the opportunity to do that, especially because in New York, there's no more licenses to have mobile, you know, carts.
Yeah.
If I could, I would have carts everywhere. But so you have these markets which allow you to explore and have direct feedback, and that's amazing.
The hard thing about New York right now is such a creative city, but it's really hard to incubate something because it's such an expensive city. So I like Fanny saying that is a great place to do it. But also the Rockaways, I feel, is the last creative incubator. It's a place where you can go, create an idea, set up shop, and there's a community that will support you there if you have a good idea.
Well, as somebody who grew up in New York City and kind of looked as the Rockaways as the last bastion of quiet, like to get away from the already very sceney, although not in the way that we define sceney nowadays, but like the scene of Coney Island. So I've been, you know, incredibly surprised myself to see the growth of the Rockaways, its exposure as a hip food hub. Mm-hmm. Can you track this a little bit with me and talk about its evolution and why do you think it's been seen as the next great incubator for food businesses?
Well, I think it started, David was out there surfing and he realized there was nowhere to eat back then. That must have been 10 years ago or more. And he opened up Rockaway Taco and that was the start of it. And now it has exploded. This year, I would say the food options are equal to the Hamptons, probably better than the Hamptons right now. So, I mean, Fanny and I were just raving about the cevicheria on the beach.
Have to try it.
It's the best.
There, paletas and ceviche.
It's fantastic. But I just wanted to add also, you know, they were very affected by the hurricane.
Yep.
And I think that there's a strong sense of community there. And so I think that also, you know, people want to to really support local businesses, and they understand, and you know, for the most part, they're excited. There's always, I think, a little bit of resistance, but I think part of being there through the whole summer, then they get to know you, you get to know them, and that is so also something very special in the markets and in this kind of environment, which you know, New York sometimes can be a little bit cold.
Yeah. Never noticed.
It's
a very warm community. And I think it's because, first of all, it's by the beach. Second of all, you're on foot. It's not like the Hamptons, you're in a car all the time. Everyone's on foot. So it's often you're invited to a barbecue or stop by, you know, this house and we're having a cocktail. It's just very community focused. Mm-hmm. And people do want to help each other out. So this cevicheria, they opened a Peruvian chicken place just this year,
yeah,
I think it is.
Just this year.
And it's packed. I mean, every time I leave on Sunday to get my meal for the evening, I mean, you have to wait a good half an hour to get your food.
Well, the summer shift is hot, hot, hot. But obviously, it's only one project of many for you, Amy.
Yes.
So can you chat a bit about the MP shift and what its focus is and how it was conceived?
Yes. Anna and I both started the MP shift because we found when you talk to a chef or a restaurant and you ask them about their brand or what they want to create next, they have a seed of an idea, but they haven't really thought it through. So we want to help them take that seed and bring it to a full formation and help them with concept, design, brand identity, and interiors. And Anna and I worked on a project together. I was asked by BMW to do some concepting for a space in Williamsburg, possibly, coming up.
You have to tell me first. Let's just add in. I'm the food editor of Brooklyn Magazine. I must know about this first, or you're never coming on the show again. Go on.
Well, anyhow, I mean, it's something they're thinking about. They're thinking about some food concepts as a company. And so Anna and I said, Anna, why don't you join me on the team? And we really worked well together. We had a kismet relationship, and we knew it was going to develop into something. And we were both working separately. Anna had just finished 7 years with Le Fooding.
Oh.
And she was consulting for chefs. And I had just finished many, many years with CEOs consulting. And I was designing a cafe, and a lot was going on. And Anna said, we really should talk about this partnership. So we did, and ever since it's been great. We're working, we just got back from Berlin. We're starting to work with a hotel there in West Berlin, which is becoming the hot spot in Berlin. So a lot of people talk about East Berlin and what's over there, but really it's migrating west, and that started from the center Mita. Mita is kind of like a Nolita in the 90s. And now that is Kreuzberg is the hot spot, like the Williamsburg of Berlin. And that's actually in West Berlin.
You have it rough. Beaches and Berlin.
I know. I know. We love this business.
How do I get that job?
You want to switch for a day. Pedal
paletas.
So what are some, obviously in Berlin, which is very cool to know. I know they love Brooklyn. Berlin, we love you right back.
Yeah,
so weren't you somehow involved in Eli and Max Sussman's upcoming restaurant?
Yes, the Sussman's. We love those guys. We've known them for a while, and we're happy to see they're doing their own thing now. So they're jumping on the fast casual trend, which is very smart, and coming up with a healthy shawarma. So they've launched over at Bergen right now. But we helped from the very ground floor, the seed, helping them come up with the idea for the name, and then helping build their brand identity. So if you like their logo and what you're seeing, you know, think of the MP shift.
Well, what are they calling it now?
It's called Samisa.
Samisa.
I don't think they've quite explained the name, but Max and Eli in the middle, M-E, and S-A-S-A on either end are their parents' last names.
Ah, very and healthy shawarma. I'm a little sad because I thought shawarma was healthy.
I know, me too. I'm like, it's just meat, right?
Usually you see it on that stick with all the oil dripping off of it.
Right.
I mean, and it's mushed together. You don't even know what it is.
Delicious.
This one is identifiable meat.
Yeah, right.
There's, you know, it's a chicken.
Well, I like the name and the logo. Tell us about the logo.
So the logo went through a lot of variations. They're very creative guys, and they had a lot of ideas of where they wanted to go. They're very influenced by some of the trends right now that you're seeing. But in the end, we wanted something that was lasting. If it's going to be fast casual, it's going to be everywhere, hopefully by the end of the year or next year. So they wanted something that people would remember and also have an icon attached to it, not just a name. So we came up with a cone kind of shape, like the shawarma. And it has several variations of stripes. And they can choose any colors, and it's a great palette. So
smart. So yeah. Fanny, I love this. You have referred to yourself as the anti-pastry chef. Why do you define yourself as such, and how do you use sweets as a springboard for innovation?
Well, I started my career in the savory side. So I really learned pastries mostly through experience. But so my approach to creating something is more the way that a savory chef would be, which is I describe most pastry chefs and colleagues that I know, they're morning people, which I'm not. They're very disciplined. They're very methodical. They're very and I'm not. It's just I multitask. I think of flavors and creating something in a very savory approach, which is, and it's very difficult when it comes to recipe testing, because I'm often sort of just adding this and that the way you would in a sauce, but you can't really do that much in pastries and baking. Every little thing matters, chemically. So I have a very hard time remembering to, I have to write that down. But for me, I just want to see how it reacts and then sort of work backwards. So it takes me a longer time sometimes to get to that place. But I feel like if I actually just write down every step, I sort of lose touch with what I'm trying to achieve. So when I was working on the donut recipe for dough, I was just focusing on the dough, and I knew what I wanted to achieve. So I kept trying different things, and I had to be very, very methodical then.
And oh my God, guys, I'm a little inclined to rush here, because there's a box of donuts in the studio that she brought, and it's probably not the thing to talk on live radio with a donut in your mouth, but I do love it. So is I think of donuts as being largely Jewish or Eastern European, and you, as not everybody might know, are half Jewish, and a lot of your donuts have a Mexican accent, like you have your hibiscus donut. Was it a conscious mashup of those two sides of you culturally?
Yeah, it was definitely not a conscious thing, but it definitely plays to my heritage. And I just, you know, like the hibiscus donut, which is the one that you just mentioned, I was craving hibiscus water. It was very hot in the kitchen, and then I was like, what if I made a glaze out of it? You know what I mean? And so it's kind of bridging the two worlds, and a lot of the flavors that I end up making are definitely Latin inspired, you know, like the dulce de leche with almonds, the passion fruit with cocoa nibs, and we have now like a tropical chili that's a personal favorite of mine. It tastes like a Mexican candy.
And oh my
like
God.
The lollipops. I don't know if you guys have had those. There are these mango-shaped lollipops covered in chili powder. No?
Oh, I've had the paletas covered in chili powder, which I know that you do. The pops, the lollipop scents.
So I think whether it's conscious or not, it's part of who I am. So it's inevitable. And so I have a lot of fun with it. And
guys, I'm going to go Homer Simpson on these donuts. I'm pushing us to our last little break. We are going to take a little break. I'm going to shove a hibiscus donut in my mouth, maybe. And then we're going to come back and chat for just a little bit, as long as our mouths can hold out. My mouth is watering. We're going to come right back and talk about our favorite beach eats. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
So being that our guests, Amy and Fanny, have really gotten us into the summer spirit by talking about their seasonal Latin food pop-up in Rockaway Beach, I thought we would close out the show by sharing our picks for our very favorite beach eats, both in New York and perhaps beyond. And of course, we're talking about beyond La New Yorkina and all of the amazing eats that you'll find at the Summer Shift, which obviously are our very favorite beach eats. But what else do you like, ladies?
There's a place I love in Mexico. There's an island called Isla Holbox, and it's spelled like whole box. Hmm. And it's an all-sand island. There are no cars. And they have a fish shack, just like an old-school fish shack on the beach, next to Hotel Mwimbi. And you sit there, and you wait for the fish boats to come in, have your Corona. And then when they're ready, they make you some ceviche. And they call it slow food. Because you're waiting. But who cares? You're on a beach, looking out at the ocean, having a beer. It's perfect.
Sounds perfect. So they're calling this the next Tulum?
Yes. Yeah, so The Guardian just did a story calling it the next Tulum, which kind of bummed me out. But hey, you know.
I'm as bummed as learning that shawarma is not healthy. Fanny, Nell, what do you find yourself eating at the beach?
Well, in the closest beach to Mexico City is Acapulco, and which used to be huge in the 70s. Now, I wouldn't say the beach is great as a beach, but there's really amazing food. So there's a typical dish called pescado a la talla, which is a grilled fish, and it has like these two rubs, one that's like a kind of an adobo made with guajillo chilies, and the other one is a green one. And they vary. Like, some people put cilantro and tomatillo. Other people put different kinds of chilies. And there's a specific area, but it's always, like, doesn't matter where you go. They're always competing to be the best one. So if you go to Acapulco, definitely have pescado.
Do you do private tours?
Sure. I know. You know, I've often thought about that.
I think you should.
That is the next stage of your business.
That's our next collaboration. That's it. The empty shirt for that. We're going to do it.
What about you, Nell?
Well, I'm a nutmegger, which means I'm from Connecticut.
But a nutmegger?
You've never heard that? Nutmegger?
I've never heard that.
Well, now you
know.
It sounds like
an insult. Do you take onus of nutmegger?
No, I like it.
Okay.
I'm hoping I don't discover it has some like horrible basis in history, but hopefully not. Anyway, but summers for me were actually about going to Watch Hill in Rhode Island, which, as you know, is right there next to Connecticut. And there you will find a place called St. Clair Annex. And summer means also ice cream, and they make incredible homemade ice creams. They have like a billion flavors, and they're always like improvising and making new ones. But butter pecan is probably one of my favorite flavors of all time, and they do an amazing butter pecan. They do peppermint crunch. They do black raspberry, just really like yummy, delicious ice creams. And you know, you're at the beach, you want something cold, and you can get a grinder there, which I'm going
to
teach you. That's another regionalism. No, grinders are what people in New England call
submarine sandwich.
You get your grinder and you get your ice cream and you go down to the beach, and it's just the best. So that's my pick.
The nutter and the grinder.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
Well, guys, at the risk of sounding like a cranky old lady, especially since I make my living writing about what's new and what's next in Brooklyn's food scene, my go-to beach eat remains the hot dogs at Nathan's in Cody Island. They've been around literally forever, but summer has not started until I get a hot dog and a thing of the fries that you get the little red pitchfork with. And seriously, like, the Nathan's there on Coney Island, you cannot recreate it in any of those little terrible, you know, strip mall franchisee offshoots. It's not the same thing. And I've been told it's because they don't wash the grill at the original Nathan's. That's why.
Don't wash your grill.
And that, my friends, is our show for today. You could learn more about the MP Shift and their seasonal beach pop-up, the Summer Shift, at themshift.com, or check out the accomplished Fanny Gerson and her incredible suites at lawnewyorkina.com and dobrooklyn.com. Gothamist's own Nell Casey is on Twitter at Nell Casey, and I am too at Sarah Zorn BK. And you could follow the show at Taste Talks or subscribe to our feed at iTunes or Stitcher. It makes for pretty easy beach listening, if I do say so myself. Until next time, thanks for tuning into Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.